There's a side hustle that's exploding right now, and that's live selling on Whatnot. I've seen Whatnot climb to the top of the App Store. I've seen the seller earnings, everything from small part-time projects to multi-million dollar businesses. Whatnot is the largest dedicated live shopping platform. Whether you're selling beauty products, collectibles, electronics, thrift store finds, luxury fashion, even food products like cookies, sellers are building real, thriving businesses. So how about this? People selling on Whatnot sell 10 times more than on other major marketplaces. That's because you're not just listing products and hoping somebody finds them. You're building real connections with buyers. And those buyers, they're spending more than an hour a day in the app. They're not just browsing. They're bidding, they're buying, and they're coming back. You go live, show off your products in real time, and then turn what you love into real income. And for a limited time, Whatnot is matching your first $150 sold in the first month. Visit whatnot.com/sell to start selling. That's whatnot.com/sell. Whatnot.com/sell.
700 episodes, that's no joke. That is a lot of episodes.
We recently crossed or are about to cross 35 million lifetime downloads.
The show is as popular as ever. I know I listened to it at many different points throughout my online journey.
The show earns between $10,000 and $20,000 a month.
Starting a podcast is super hard. Would you agree with that?
I think it's easy to start. I think it's hard to stay started.
Why is it overlooked by so many people and businesses?
I have found that as listenership grows, that's a really powerful lead domino to email subscriber growth, to revenue growth.
But you shared something that I wanted to talk about. I think you called it the listener pyramid.
This is a four-tiered pyramid from strangers to listeners to subscribers to fans at the top of the pyramid.
Very hard to understand how to monetize a podcast.
Podcast sponsorships is kind of this game of amplitude and frequency, where it's like, how big is the audience and how often can we reach them?
You're 700 episodes in now. What works well? What doesn't work well?
One of the things that I recognized early on was...
This is an episode I did with Jared Bauman from the Niche Pursuits podcast, all about the business of the Side Hustle show. So if you ever wanted that behind the scenes look on the marketing, production, and monetization behind it, this is the one for you.
All right. Welcome back to the Niche Pursuits podcast. My name is Jared Bauman. Today, we are joined by Nick Loper, host of the Side Hustle Show. Nick, welcome back to the podcast.
What's happening, man? Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Lots changed in the world of side hustles, lots changed in the online world. So I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. And today, we are talking about a particular topic that you have a lot of experience in. Your podcast, your show, the Side Hustle Show. We're going to talk about basically how you grew it, what you did that's working really well, and share a lot of tips along the way. Before we dive into the agenda, though, maybe give us some backstory. I'm sure a lot of people won't have heard your previous episodes or newer listeners and will want to know more about you.
Yeah, so I'm coming in on 13 years of hosting the show, started in 2013. We're over 700 episodes at this point. Started from kind of a place of my own curiosity. And in maybe some, inflated sense of perceived expertise, where like I'd already had a side hustle that became the thing that let me quit my day job, my one and only corporate job. So I was like, well, I got a little bit of credibility in this space, but I'm still curious to learn more of, well, how'd you come up with that idea? Or how'd you get your first customers for that? Or how'd you figure out how much to charge? All that was fascinating and still is today. And so that is kind of what drives the show. But prior to that, so I had an affiliate marketing business in the footwear space. That was the original side hustle that, was kind of like my street cred or ticket entry into this space. But it just fell in love with kind of the entrepreneurial, especially the online business side of things. And there are a million ways. Like, I was legitimately worried. Like, am I going to run out of people to talk to? Like, if I commit to doing this every week, what's going to happen? But it's there are more stories that come across my desk than there are episodes in the month, for sure.
700 episodes. That's no joke. That is a lot of episodes. Congratulations. That's you've had a great run, and I feel like the show is as popular as ever. I know I listened to it at many different points throughout my online journey. When I was transitioning from one career to another, I was listening to a lot of the stuff you had going. So I've been a listener for quite a while. It's great to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you tuning in, and love to have people go back and binge on the archives, because a lot of it is evergreen stuff.
It's true. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, when you're talking about a side hustle, like story kind of wrapped up in each podcast episode, like a lot of those are very timeless truths that don't change as much as our industry does seem to change. I mean, perhaps, you know, we're not, you know, flipping shoes on an old Amazon FBA account anymore, but things modernize, things update, but some of a lot of the truths probably still remain the same.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of been, in having done it as long, there's like overarching themes that keep popping up, even though, you know, we're not talking about merch by Amazon or the you know, private blog networks or some of the, like, the tactics change, but the overall strategies kind of remain true.
And do they ever change, though? The tactics, they do change. They change fast, which is why people listen to podcasts, because they got to keep up with that. So let's talk about your story, okay? I mean, you kind of gave the high level of it, but talk about your podcast. That's what we're talking about today. We're going to talk about how you grew it. And I'm really excited about today. I'll just share a quick little intro from myself. I've been blown away with how important hosting a podcast has been to my career and my kind of what I'm doing for a living. I didn't expect a lot of what came out of that. I expected what you see on the surface. And so I'm really excited to have you on to talk about the podcast you've grown, because I'm guessing some of the same themes will come out. And so I just really want to encourage people to listen. You might have thought about a podcast for a long time. You might think it's not a good idea and maybe today will help, or you might be running a podcast and looking for ways to grow it and streamline it. So I think there's a lot of different types of people we can talk to today. Okay, my little intro aside, let's start maybe from the top. What does a show look like today? Maybe give us, you know, from the origin to where we're at now, what it looks like, to give people an idea of the scope of what the show encompasses.
Yeah, so the show is trying to be heavy on the tactics and light on the theory. This is the show that I wanted to listen to starting back in 2013. Like, don't give me this mindset stuff. You know, if you believe it, it'll come true. Like, tell me how you did the thing so I can go do it myself. And that kind of still drives the show today. But it was at that time, it was like, well, if you want to have, you know, a personal brand, an online business, you know, podcasting or YouTube, plus a blog, right? Blog was like the standard thing. Like, and I thought of myself as a writer first and foremost. And so the second channel was going to be this podcast, because it was honestly the lesser of two evils. Like, I don't really want to do YouTube. That sounds intimidating. That sounds like more work. But I could do this podcast. I was a listener of podcasts at the time, Smart Passive Income, Tropical MBA. It was like when I first kind of had that moment of, and it was probably, like probably saw a tweet or something with like a compelling sounding title, clicking on the thing, and then realizing there's nothing here. Realizing that it's whatever they promised was buried 40 minutes deep into some MP3 file, like almost like an anger response. Like that's not cool. But what happened was, like, I figured out the hurdle of getting, you know, finding the show, finding the specific episode they're talking about, finding the time to listen to it, like, while I was at the gym, and then having that epiphany moment of doing that week after week and building that relationship with the hosts. In some cases, people I've never met, but, like, I feel like I know them. And, like, that was really, really powerful. It's like, oh, I could do the same thing. I'm going to give this a shot. And I found I really enjoyed doing the interviews, even though, you know, you zoom out on the download chart, of course, like it's so close to the Y axis in those early days where it's like, there's relatively speaking, nobody tuning in, but it was still like just enough traction to kind of justify continuing to put in the work and continuing to do it.
You know, you touched on something, because I hear this from a lot of people. And I didn't have to start this podcast. Spencer had to start it. Spencer had to spend the first, I think, 10 years grinding away to do the hard work. I just walked in and I was like, oh, wow, we already got a pretty established
built-in audience.
Listenership. This is wonderful. But I know from being connected to so many podcasters and podcast hosts that starting is hard in anything. I would say starting a podcast compared to so many other online ventures, YouTube channel, blog, a newsletter, et cetera, an e-commerce brand. Starting a podcast is super hard. Would you agree with that? And what were the biggest struggles out of the gate, and maybe an unexpected one or two that you didn't see coming?
I think it's easy to start I think it's hard to stay started because the relationship building aspect is probably the most powerful channel that you can have, something like really intimate, like if people spending, you know, literally hours with you in their earbuds and they're doing it over weeks or months or years at a time. Like that's a really powerful place to be from a creator standpoint, but it's hard. Like what you hear that half hour of audio or that hour of audio may have 4 or 5 hours behind the scenes prep that went into it. And in the early days when nobody's tuning in, it takes the same amount of effort to produce an episode that 10 people listen to,
more,
or 10,000 people listen to, or 100,000 people listen to. And so it's like, it's a uniquely leveraged platform in that sense, but it can be hard to justify in the early days keeping it going when you're not seeing the results.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is something that is really challenging already as a podcast host, because you're talking, I mean, I know there are people listening, but I'm really just talking into a camera and you right now. And so when the numbers back that up, it can be a bit of a lonely space. What were like some of the early hits or the early things that worked out well for you that helped catapult you to that next level? I know the growth curve you talked about is like, it was so small for so long in comparison to now, but like surely you had some wins along the way that either validated the idea, gave you that shot of energy, or brought you that, you know, first batch of real solid listeners.
One of the things that I recognized early on was you've got to sell it. You got to sell the content through whatever ways you have. And it's really difficult, even if the meat of the episode is really, really strong, for most cases, it's going to be just the title, right? And it's going to be on a small screen. It's going to be, why should I invest my 40 minutes into listening to this? What is the transformation, right? It's like, I did an interview, this would be years ago, where the host did what they were supposed to do after the episode went live. They're like, hey, Nick, thanks so much for joining us. Your episode's live today. Feel free to check it out and share if you think it's worthwhile. And I click on the thing and it literally says episode 33, Nick Loper. And I'm like, what is in it for me? Like, why would anybody click on this? Nobody knows who I am. Like, yeah. Why do I care? Right. And so a couple early titles that worked and was like episode 1 or 2 was like from, you know, heavy metal college band to six figure agency, or, you know, how one, this was episode 5. Still remember this guy, how one Fiverr seller earned enough money to buy a house in his first year or something. And I was like, wait, how did you possibly, what could you possibly be selling for $5 that you earned enough to buy a house? And he's like, Nick, it's all about the upsells, baby. Yeah. It's like, I love it. But those kind of like hooks, because that's what drew me into podcasting at first, was like, it's such a hurdle to get somebody to listen to the first time. You got to make it really, really compelling. It's something that Niche Pursuits does really well, like going through some of your recent titles. And it's like, you know, numbers, attention, timeframes, like how I built, you know, $100,000 business in 6 months, you know, with no experience, like those kind of things, overcoming objections, like it works really well.
We do put a decent amount of time into that. There's a lot of back and forth too, trying to figure out what's going to hit. Where's like, give us some numbers, whatever you're comfortable with, on where it's at today. Because I think it's a bit crazy to think about when you share some of the numbers that I know are behind it. I might not even know all the numbers, but I know some of the big headline numbers to the Side Hustle show.
Yeah. So we recently crossed or are about to cross 35 million lifetime downloads, not including the YouTube side of things, just the audio side. It reaches, you know, a couple 100,000 downloads a month, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. And the number that we kind of pay attention to, this was on PodTrack, and I don't know if maybe Megaphone or maybe Spotify will tell you something similar, but like the number of unique devices is kind of a measure, an estimated metric of the audience size, where it's around 100,000 unique listeners per month, which is really, it's intimidating in a way. Like, you imagine standing at the 50-yard line of, you know, the Horseshoe in Columbus or the Big House in Michigan, like these 100,000 person stadiums, and just, you know, me and Jared having a chat here and it's being broadcast to all these people. It's intimidating, but it's also really, really powerful.
I agree with you again. If you don't think about it that way, you feel like you're just having a conversation with someone one-on-one, but then you realize the scope of something. 35 million downloads. That is a staggering number. Let's talk about, if we can, why podcasting beats so many other channels and the value that it's given to your business. I teased it a bit because I was surprised by that. But again, I didn't start this. I just came into a brand that was already established. So I'm sure the benefits for you have been even more far-reaching given the size, the scope, and the journey that you've been on. Like, why is podcasting such a good medium? Why is it overlooked by so many people and businesses? Like, share with us some of the highs that have come from podcasting.
Yeah, what's funny is it felt, even in 2013, it felt crowded. It felt saturated. Like, does the world really need another entrepreneur interview podcast? There were already, you know, EO Fire and Mixergy, and, you know, it had been done, right? But it's like, okay, the specific niche, you know, to the niche pursuits thing, it was like the niche of side hustles for some reason resonated with people. But it's, again, like this powerful relationship building thing. I have found that as listenership grows, that's a really powerful lead domino to email subscriber growth, to revenue growth, where it becomes, I don't know, there's this community building component to it. And I have like the Facebook group to thank for that a little bit, the email list to thank for that a little bit, where it's trying to make it from, you know, just pure broadcast medium, one to many. Like, how can we make it many to many? Like, there's a community of side hustlers out there where it doesn't have to be so lonely, which, you know, there's a lot of people toiling away nights and weekends trying to build their thing. It's like, no, there's other people out there who kind of are bought into the same idea, and they understand it's a long-term type of journey, and we're all along the ride together. So I'm trying to build that along the way has been pretty powerful too.
I'll be right back with more behind-the-scenes details on The Side Hustle Show coming up right after this. When you're a small business, the right hire can be make or break. Hoping the right people see your job posting isn't the best growth strategy. When the pressure's on and you need the right hire, this is a job for sponsored jobs. Join the 3.3 million employers worldwide who use our sponsor Indeed to connect with quality talent that meets your specific criteria. Talking skills, experience, certifications, or location. How Indeed sponsored jobs work is they boost your job post in the search results so you can reach the best fit candidate to help your business thrive. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less time, less stress, and more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs. Side Hustle Show listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed sponsored jobs. So last month, it was time to replace the air filter in the car, which is about the level of vehicle maintenance I'm qualified to do. So I Google up the part number, I find this random store that is selling it, and then to my absolute delight, I see that they're running on Shopify. How could I tell? That little purple Shop Pay button at checkout. It meant not having to create yet another new account. It meant not having to find my wallet. I am paid and checked out in just a couple clicks. You already know that our sponsor, Shopify, is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world, including that car parts website and dozens of Side Hustle Show guests. And you probably already know about the built-in store templates and marketing tools that make it easy to get your store online and get found. But what you might not know is that Shopify can also help manage your inventory, ship products internationally, and even handle customer returns. On top of that, you've got access to their award-winning 24/7 customer support if you have any trouble. So let's see less carts go abandoned and more sales going with Shopify and their Shop Pay button. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/sidehustle. That's shopify.com/sidehustle. One more time, it's shopify.com/sidehustle.
Are there gains or economies of scale that come with it? Is it something where, you know, like so many other platforms, they build upon themselves? You know, when you have a YouTube channel, that can grow on itself and it actually get easier. That can become something that your efforts start to multiply. Is that the case with podcasting, or is it really more of a grind? You've been doing a weekly show for so long, or is it some of both?
There's probably a little bit of both where, you know, it's kind of like there's an old, an old GM saying where, you know, being number one sells cars, where, you know, if you can show up on lists of the best entrepreneurship podcasts, the best side hustle podcasts, like it kind of becomes a virtuous circle over time where it's like, well, he's been doing it for so long, it must be worth tuning into. Look at all these 5-star reviews. I think there is that element to it, but there is a, you know, kind of repetitiveness, or, you know, almost an identity. It's become part of my identity. Well, every Thursday, it's just something that happens. It's, you know, another episode comes out. So there is that grind to it where you kind of have to keep recreating the product week after week after week versus a, you know, a blog article, even though it is evergreen, right? It's, it has a shorter shelf life in a lot of cases than that blog article that could stick in the search results for years.
Yeah. Okay. You hit on it perfectly. Like it feels like there is a little bit of both worlds in that it's a grind because you have to produce content fairly consistently. You know, most podcasts that work over a long period of time are consistent. At the same time, though, and you already touched on, the listenership that you get is pretty loyal and comes back frequently versus a blog, where more often than not, most of the traffic to blogs is kind of one and done. So I can see both sides.
Yeah. And then just the relationship of it. It's like, you know, I might spend 30 seconds like scrolling a blog. Like if I land from Google, I scroll the headers on the blog post, or I like trying to answer a specific question. And I find that the website audience for SideHustleNation.com is much more transient or transactional versus the podcast listeners. Sometimes have been there for years. Sometimes they listen to hundreds of episodes and they're much more kind of long-term thinking. And, you know, I think podcast listeners are completionist by nature, where it's like, look, if I start this thing and it's not awful, like I'm going to see it through to the 40-minute mark, you know, versus you see the drop-off charts on YouTube and everything else. It's like, no, they're much more loyal and dedicated.
Yep. Okay, good. You shared something in our back and forth as we were preparing for this. Yes, folks, there's preparation, as you alluded to, for these podcasts. It takes time. But you shared something that I wanted to talk about, and it was, I think you called it the listener pyramid. And you had a nice framework for thinking through these different levels, if you will. And again, I'm using my own vernacular and how I define it. But could you go in and talk about this listener pyramid and explain it to the listeners?
Yeah, I think this is an important framework to keep in mind, and you could substitute, you know, whatever, you know, asset, creative asset that you're trying to build. But in terms of podcasting, this is a four-tiered pyramid from strangers to listeners to subscribers to fans at the top of the pyramid. The fans are the people who are shouting from the rooftops. They love you. They buy everything that you have to sell. They are evangelizing for you. But every piece of content that you create is designed to kind of ascend people along this ladder or up this pyramid. And the challenge is the base of the pyramid, the biggest people, the biggest section of the pyramid is strangers. It's the people who don't know you exist. And it's such a battle to try and fight for awareness, and podcast discoverability is really, really challenging. And it's like one of the reasons why it can be such a slow slog is you think about, well, how do you find other shows? It's probably because a friend told you to go check it out. It's almost like always word of mouth. And so it's trying to encourage that and make it so compelling and share worthy that you almost have to tell somebody about that. I don't know if you're like a history fan, but it's like when you first discover Dan Carlin and his like 5-hour marathon rants about World War II or Alexander the Great, and you're like, this is incredible. Like you almost have to tell somebody about it. Or like vintage Pat Flynn, where it's like, oh, I was out at Walmart and I was scanning these clearance items, and you know, all of a sudden I sent that into Amazon, and it was like, you can like, hold on, I gotta go download this app right now and go check out Walmart. You know, you have to tell your, you know, frugal shopping friends about this. Like, did you know this was a thing? And so trying to, and I don't hit that every time out, but like trying to make it compelling with those businesses or those side hustles. Like we had a guy renting out portable hot tubs. We had a woman who was a professional photo organizer. We've had people renting out mobility scooters or buying billboards or doing pet waste removal businesses. It's just like the novelty factor, I think, definitely checks a box where people are like, I gotta share this. I gotta help spread the word of mouth there.
I'm looking through the latest podcasts, and you know, obviously this is at time of recording, but we've got a junk hauling business, flipping lawnmowers. This is a college kid. I mean, reselling software. I didn't even know you could do that. Like, yeah, you're right. There's some really compelling things where I'm like, man, I wish I had about 4 hours today where I could just go listen to some of these. Some of those is your storytelling. Some of these is the way you titled it. Some of these is just the fact that you keep finding these really interesting ideas over and over again.
Yeah, it's been a blast. So going back to this, you know, converting strangers into listeners, you know, finding those stories, encouraging word of mouth, writing the titles in such a way that make people want to overcome the hurdle to like find the show, find that specific episode, find the time to listen to it, like all of the steps they have to take. And then we go through, or I go through kind of a lot of effort in guesting on other shows like this one, like John Lee Dumas has the line, well, podcasters listen to podcasts. And so he makes an effort to guest on other shows and rarely would turn one down unless there's truly like nobody listening to it. But it's like getting in front of other people's audiences. And then lately we've been doing a lot of paid promotion in the listener growth areas through different podcast apps where you can promote your show and try and drive listeners that way too.
Ooh, I want to ask you about that later on. That's interesting. All right. Well, maybe we can kind of start to break down each one of these. Is that, do you mind if I ask you more questions about that? How to get someone to move from one to the next. Okay. Let's go strangers to listeners. I'll just leave it open-ended. How do you get people from strangers to become listeners? I basically just repeated exactly what I said the first time.
Yeah, that was kind of the section I just went through with the compelling titles, with the podcast promotion, with the guesting on other shows. And then we try and play like some very simple, you know, podcast SEO with the, you know, we still want to make the title compelling, but we also want to make sure we're including what did we talk about. If we did an episode about Instagram marketing, we want to make sure we have Instagram marketing in the title of that episode. The iTunes search algorithm, the Spotify search algorithm, even YouTube to a certain extent, is not nearly as sophisticated as Google is. Mm-hmm. It's just very keyword driven. So making sure if you have a well-known guest, including their name in the title of the podcast, like trying to make it easy for people to search and discover. Like, I don't think that's a huge driver percentage-wise of listeners, but it's not going to hurt you. And then, but especially on YouTube, like it can be really evergreen. And a lot of the titles on YouTube are like how-to titles, like how to build a window washing business, you know, up to $10,000 a month, right? It's trying to capture both the keyword and the compelling reason to click.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you ever modify your titles after the podcast episode goes live? Do you ever modify it on YouTube to capture different audiences? Do you find that that has any effect, or is, because really you are looking at, especially on YouTube, like when you launch the podcast, it is serving one type of audience, your listeners who routinely wait for a new episode to go live on YouTube. That's their medium of choice. But then, like you said, over time, you're really more trying to get into the search and discovery side of YouTube, where you're trying to target people who might not be familiar with the podcast, might not even be familiar with the fact that they would be clicking on a podcast, but are really more topically searching for something.
Yeah, the YouTube titles and really the website titles are much more keyword driven or SEO driven. And then the podcast title, the one that goes out into the Spotify feed, the Apple feed, is probably more curiosity driven. And so instead of like leading with the keyword or the topic, it will often lead with the dollar amount, like $1,000 a month with this unique real estate strategy or something, versus, you know, how to buy a co-living house, or, you know, it's kind of just shifting it around differently where it's the same topic, but presented a little bit differently for different audiences.
Okay. Perfect. Well then let's move on to that second stage. So again, we started with strangers. They've turned into listeners. How do we move them from listeners to subscribers?
Yeah, this is really important. So now somebody has voted for you. They said, look, I'm going to give this a shot. Now you got to deliver on what you promised. That means cutting to the chase. That means like being respectful of people's time. You can kind of see the evolution of this over the course of 12 years of the show, where it's like used to have this like, you know, voiceover guy and this musical intro, and it would be 45 seconds before you even start talking. It's like, no, cut to the chase. Actually, a friend of mine had a productivity show and she would start, we don't have an intro because we'd never waste your time. Boom, 3 seconds in and she's like already onto the topic. And it's like, oh, okay, yes. So trying to get to the point quickly, editing for clarity, length, brevity, and that's kind of where I spend my time in post-production, is saying like, what was the most boring 10% of this episode, right? If we recorded for an hour, could we make it 50 minutes? Like that kind of thing. Just being respectful of people's time, delivering on that promise that you made in the title and description. And then trying to convert that one-time listener into a subscriber. And so maybe it is referencing relevant past episodes. Hey, if you listen to this, you might also want to listen to this. We do a lot of episode specific lead magnets where if, you know, we talked about building a Facebook marketing funnel or like, okay, well, download your free companion worksheet on how to build your own funnel. Or we talked about renting out portable hot tubs. Here's 25 other unconventional things you could rent out for a profit, you know, enter your email here, or kind of a broader, you know, podcast driven lead magnet would be like, look, there's over 700 episodes. I'd love to have you binge on the archives, but you're probably stretched for time a little bit. So why don't you go build yourself a personalized playlist? Just answer a few short questions at hustle.show. You can do it on your phone and it'll build you like a, based on your answers, a custom playlist of our greatest hits. Wow, so cool. Trying to drive listeners into email subscribers specifically in that case, but audio subscribers would be great as well.
You've talked about it a couple times now at different passages. And so I want to ask, like, how much of a flow do you have for calling people to take action at various points during a podcast episode? And what have you landed on? Like, have you discovered something works better than another? I'm just curious because it's evident that you are not just looking at a podcast episode as a piece of content, but also as an opportunity to kind of get people engaged at different phases of the funnel.
Yeah, I used to do a beginning and end. Lately, it's mostly just been at the end, like that specific call to action to go do that thing. If I'm really organized, I'll do it like as the lead in to my first ad break. Like, hey, we put together a special bonus, special listener bonus for this episode. Make sure to grab it here. And we'll be right back with Jared after a word from our sponsors. And so just trying to tease it a little bit, putting it out there. Cause, you know, this is kind of like radio advertising where it's repetition, and awareness. Kind of, that's another thing that kind of, you know, to go from when we get to subscribers to fans, but like verbal cues, verbal repetition. We've taken a page out of the morning radio playbook where they run the same segments every morning. Like the commuter traffic kind of knows what to expect. And there's like, if there's inside jokes, they kind of feel like they're in on it. And so trying to incorporate those types of elements into the show as well.
Yeah, traffic on the eights. I don't really listen to radio anymore, but I remember that from commuting back in the day. They'd always, you know, have some flow to that. Okay, I know fans are the holy grail, but is getting listeners into subscribers, is that where you can kind of start to see things tip, where you start to get the scale? Where does that start to happen?
Yeah, this was a really big inflection point for me in the business, because this would be a little over a year into the show and kind of this embarrassing that it took this long, but like this epiphany moment of like, look, the show at that stage, especially, is not a business on its own. It is a content marketing arm for the business. And when I started treating it as such and really got intentional about converting listeners, what few listeners I had into email subscribers, like that was the turning point, right? So I had like 1,000 email subscribers at that point, a little over a year into it. Grateful for every one of those, like very early audience members, and some of them are still around today. It's been awesome. But once we got intentional, like, hey, look, you're out walking the dog, you're at the gym, you're driving in your car, you're not in a great place to take notes. Don't worry, we did it for you. All you have to do is go to sidehustlenation.com/whatever the episode was, download the free PDF. We called it the highlight reel, like the Sports Center version, the highlight reel of what we just talked about with all the guests, top tips. You download it for free. Within 3 months of doing that consistently, the email list was 3,000. Within 6 months, it was 6,000. Within a year, it was 12,000. So it was this really big kind of like inflection point or hockey stick moment for the email growth. And now all of a sudden, instead of this anonymous medium, I don't have any idea who's tuning in. I could see the little blips on the download chart, but like who knows who these people are, right? All of a sudden I have email. I can promote my latest offer. I can promote the latest episode. Hey, you might want to check this out if this is relevant to you. They've got something in their inbox they can easily forward and share to a friend like, hey, you should check out this show, or you should check this out. For affiliate offers, for newsletter sponsorships that we do now, that was really, really important. And that's why I think that listeners into subscribers step is really crucial, because otherwise it's just anonymous. You're kind of like relying on somebody to download your thing, even if they have, like, you know, the push notifications and, like, you know, but yeah, another touch point, get people into the inbox, really powerful.
Yeah. You mentioned that you have a good, you know, this is all about driving people from the podcast to become a subscriber for email. But then you also said earlier that you are constantly pushing email subscribers back to different podcast episodes. I mean, it sounds almost like a flywheel effect. Like, how important is that flywheel effect? Is that just happened because you're looking to give them more content and thus the podcast is what you recommend? Or is it more strategic than just that?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, the most of the stuff that I send out, probably 90% of the stuff I send out, is just a newsletter based on what the latest episode is about, and trying to do it in a text version. Look, if you don't want to listen to this, I want to give you the meat of what we talked about here, or at least a high enough level overview where you could say, like, oh, that's interesting. And then make the decision, I want to go listen to it more and more. And that's been an evolution over time, whereas it used to be very short, like, check out the latest episode. It's like, you know, give me a little bit more before I commit to this.
Yeah.
But it's also a channel to promote affiliate partners, promote my own products. And so it's been just having that extra touch point where it does kind of, like you mentioned, flywheel, or where it just is, you know, trying to, I mean, the whole goal is, you know, when somebody thinks side hustle, like, hopefully they think of Side Hustle Nation and the Side Hustle Show, and like being part of that ecosystem, or being kind of at the center of that hub.
We're almost to the top of the pyramid. Stick around for that, plus the all-important monetization question coming up right after this. Spring is this natural reset point, and if you've been putting off dealing with some of the messier parts of your business, well, maybe now's the time to do a little spring cleaning. That's why today's episode is brought to you by Quo, spelled Q-U-O. This is the smarter way to upgrade and streamline your business communications. Quo is the number one rated business phone system on G2 with over 3,000 reviews, and it's built for how modern teams work. That's why more than 90,000 businesses already trust Quo for theirs. Quo works wherever you do, right from an app on your phone or computer, and it lets you keep your existing phone number. Plus, AI is built right in, not something you need to bolt on after the fact, with automatic call logging, summaries, and next steps, so nothing gets lost. It can even answer the phone and qualify leads for you when nobody can take the call. Let's make this the season where no opportunity and no customer slips away. Try Quo for free, plus get 20% off your first 6 months when you go to quo.com/sidehustle. That's Quo, quo.com/sidehustle. Quo, no missed calls, no missed customers. Running a business is hard. If it were easy, everybody would be doing it, right? You've got a to-do list a mile long, and you got a dozen different hats to wear. So here's a resource to help lighten your load. I'm excited to partner with Gusto for this episode because they've been one of the most recommended services by Side Hustle Show guests. Gusto is the easy, affordable, online payroll, HR, and benefits tool for modern small businesses. In fact, they help over 400,000 businesses like yours take the pain out of tasks like payroll tax filing, direct deposit, health insurance administration, 401k benefits, onboarding tools, and lots more. Of course, I encourage you to do your own due diligence, check out their reviews online, and I think you'll find the common threads in the comments about how easy it is to use, their great customer support, and the great value. So here's the deal. To help you get started or to make the switch, Side Hustle Show listeners can try Gusto today at gusto.com/sidehustle, and you'll get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/sidehustle. One more time, that's Gusto, gusto.com/sidehustle.
Let's talk about turning subscribers into fans. And, you know, I think of Seth Godin, when I think of, you know, Tribes, his book on that. I think of, like, the idea of a fan. Maybe define what that is for the context we're talking about here, and then I'd love to hear some ways that you found work well to turn subscribers into fans.
Yeah, a fan in, you know, my case would be somebody who buys a product. This would be somebody who shares the episode with a friend. This would be somebody who listens to everything that you put out. Like, that's kind of fandom in my case. Maybe they support the sponsors of the show. It's kind of the pinnacle of the pyramid, because that's like what you would want everybody to be. If you had an audience of only fans, like, that would be incredible, right? And you could imagine the flywheel that would start to spin. So some of those elements that get people there, you know, having the additional touch points, they've joined the Facebook group, they've joined the email list, they are engaging with other listeners, maybe in the Facebook group, asking and answering questions. That would be really cool. Somebody that does it really well is Sam and Sean from My First Million. They don't talk about it as much as they used to, but they used to always harp on the gentleman's agreement, where it's like, look, we're making this content for free. We don't ask for much, but there is a gentleman's agreement, and that's that you hit the subscribe button, that you hit the follow button on whatever platform it is. And it's like, oh, this is, I'm just got to hold up my end of the bargain, right? It's kind of became some of their, you know, internal language that they use, similar, like no small boy stuff, right? It's something that they would say over and over again. And so they kind of have built their own little language. I think they even have merch for this stuff now, if you want a shirt that says no small boy stuff, but stuff like that to ascend people into fandom and make, you know, making offers. It's like one of the first things that I ever offered on the show, and to the audience, was a private mastermind for the really low price of $100 a month. I will host this private mastermind. And I think I got like 5 or 6 applications, maybe 7 applications for this, a little less than a year into the show. I don't think I would have gotten any applications if it weren't for the relationship having been built over the course of that first year, through audio.
I mean, you're 700 episodes in now. So surely I can ask you some questions about like what works well, what doesn't work well. I know it will be specific to you and your podcast, to you and your listenership, to you and your topic. However, I've got to imagine you've got some somewhat global thoughts on what works well and what doesn't work well. What keeps people coming back? What types of episodes work well? And don't worry, folks. I'm going to ask them all about monetization next as soon as we get through this. So if you want to know about monetizing a podcast, it is on the agenda coming up.
Yeah, I think for both of our shows, one of the transition points or elevation points from subscribers into fans is somebody who has heard an idea, taken action on it, and seen the result. Like, oh, I heard about this strategy on your show. I tried it. And what do you know? It worked. I actually made money from this. And now all of a sudden it's like, this is real. And so that's really cool. I got an email the other day from a listener, from a subscriber, like, oh, I took my family to Disneyland, family of 6 to Disneyland because of something that I heard on your show. It's like, that's incredible. Like, I, you know, have a little tag in Gmail that says, you know, testimonials, like, okay, I'll file this one away, you know, for those rainy days when you get some hate. But it was like, that kind of stuff is really, really cool to hear from listeners. And I imagine you get the same.
From time to time we do. You're right. It is nice to hear. Yeah, it is nice to hear. Especially like I remember at various points either having a guest on and then we get stories, you know, many months later, having even something that we've talked about as hosts, Spencer and I or Thomas and I, and talked about it a decent amount and then seen people have success. It's really, it's pretty amazing to kind of play a role in that.
And you can kind of bring those, you know, now that the show's been going for long enough, you have like almost generations of it where it's like, okay, we first aired this topic about becoming a, you know, a mobile notary loan signing agent. And then like a year later, oh, somebody listened to that episode and is now doing the thing and making thousands of dollars a month. And now, you know, somebody listened to that episode. It's like almost like there's like their grandchildren or their podcast grandchildren, inspiration babies. And it's been really cool to kind of breathe new life into these, you know, topics that we've talked about, like, oh, that still works. And that is, this is something that people are seeing results with.
That's a great point. It's a great point. Yeah. The longevity can only help in those situations. All right. Well, I could ask a lot more questions about it, but I want to make sure we leave some time for monetization here. Sponsorships are, from what I understand, either a big part of this, your podcast, or really the biggest part of your podcast when it comes to monetization. Talk about it from a high level. What does that look like? Where have you landed with that? What has worked historically over the years? What hasn't worked? I think that's a big fear for people is when they start a podcast, it's such a big unknown that they don't really, you know much about that side of things. We can go look at what it looks like to get YouTube followers and to get more YouTube views, but it's very hard to understand how to monetize a podcast.
You're 100% right. The big piece of the monetization pie is traditional sponsorships, which is something that I'm really grateful for. It's well suited for me, where it's like I can focus on just making the content that I want to make, like playing the part of the curious host and finding brands that are in alignment with the audience and making that pitch. Like that's something that like I feel really good about. And it's like, I can get paid. The audience gets the stuff that they want for free and the advertisers get access to that audience. What I was hesitant to do for a long time, like for a lot of years, like I sold the show myself in terms of the sponsorships. And for the sake of disclosure, it was probably 3 years before like this was even, you know, a meaningful source of income. So it was like definitely put in the time before any sponsors like really came knocking and be like, oh, can we sponsor the show? So if you have less than 5 or 10,000 downloads per episode, like this may not be a viable path. So the audience size has to be there. Podcast sponsorships is kind of this game of amplitude and frequency where it's like, how big is the audience and how often can we reach them? And so it's like, if you have a daily show with a big audience,
then
this could be a really viable path. But if you have a weekly show with a smaller audience, like, does the math really work out? But I was trying to sell the show myself for a lot of years because I had brands reaching out. That's where it started. Like brands were reaching out proactively to me, Teachable, FreshBooks, some of the early sponsors. And I was like, yeah, let's make a deal. What I was really hesitant to do was the industry has shifted toward dynamic insertion and it has shifted toward third-party like ad brokerage agencies to go out and sell the show. And so I've been with Yap Media, Young and Profiting Media, with Halataha for the last 2-ish years. And they, again, I was hesitant to do it. It's like, why do I need to pay 30% to some agency when the brands are coming to me directly?
Yep.
But way bigger brands, way bigger deals, way longer term contracts. And it's just freed up so much time to like focus on actually making the show, actually making the content. So I'm making more than I ever did before and doing less work on the sponsorship side than I did before. So I was like, oh, I should have done that a long time ago, you know, dragging me kicking and screaming into like the era of modern podcast monetization. But I'll say this too, like sponsorships is just one way to go. And if you don't have that audience size, you have to get a little more creative. And in a lot of cases, it's selling your own stuff or using the podcast as a promotion channel for your own services, for your own products, for your own community, for even promoting your guests' stuff as an affiliate, perhaps, although that's kind of driven by audience size as well. But lots of different ways to kind of ring the cash register as a host.
You didn't say it this way, but I almost heard, almost to summarize, like step one, get an audience of some size. Step two, brands start to interact with brands that are a good fit. Hopefully they're also interacting with you. And then step three, to some degree, get big enough to where the deal size, the agency route can really give you those economies of scale.
Yeah. So if a typical, you know, mid-roll CPM is $25, and if you have 2 mid-roll spots and 1,000 people listening, you're like, okay, I can make $50 an episode. And it's like, but it's uniquely scalable. It's like, well, if I have 10,000 people listen now, that's $500 an episode. Or if I have 100,000 people, now it's whatever. I can't do public math, but maybe it's 5,000. So it does scale pretty well. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, Hala and the ad sales team is like, longer episodes, more ad breaks, more, you know, could you publish 3 times a week? Like, come on, what's going on? We need more inventory to sell. It's like, hey, look, I'm happy with where I'm at, but how about we add pre-rolls? Like, it's, you know, it's really okay.
Can you give us any sort of idea? And again, I don't want to put you on the spot for an exact amount, but can you give us any sort of idea, like what type of, if you're consistent, if you're publishing a weekly show, the kind of the things you talked about, like what kind of money is a podcast going to bring in from sponsorship, just to give people an idea, whether it's use your own as an example, or whether you kind of go down the route of maybe, you know, 25,000 monthly downloads, like whatever it looks like. I just want to give people an idea of what a primarily monetized podcast could look like. And then I want to ask you a few more questions about using the podcast to drive value elsewhere in your business.
Yeah. So for me, the show earns, you know, between $10,000 and $20,000 a month for the 6 episodes that we put out, like every Thursday and every other Monday, ends up being five or six hours worth of content. And of course there's work behind the scenes that goes into that, but it's a tough gig to give up. It's like, I got to make my hour of radio a week and to be able to get paid what I do on the flexible schedule that I have like never would have imagined that. Like when I started with a $60 mic in the corner of the living room, like in all of the self-doubt, like no idea what I'm doing. Is anybody going to tune into this? Is anybody going to care? Am I just going to embarrass myself? Like what it has turned into and kind of the lifestyle that it has allowed and afforded us is like something I'll just forever be grateful for.
And I mean, you've put in the time and the years at the same time. I mean, you've also talked about how, you know, once you start to figure out the levers to pull, once you start to figure out what works with your audience, when you start to figure out how, you know, you find the frequency, you find the amount, the type of people, you find all those types of things. When that starts to fall into place, you talked about how it does get a lot easier.
It became part of my identity. It was probably like my second kid was born and you have to fill out the birth certificate. This would have been 2018. And like, you know, parents, occupation. It's like, who cares? Why is this on the form? But I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to put podcaster. I don't care what the stigma is. I'm going to put it down. And, you know, that was kind of the identity flip of like, this is something that I do. And it was the commitment in the early years. Like, I'm going to do this for free because I enjoy doing it, because I kind of see where it could go. And I'm really happy that I stuck with it, even though, you know, relatively speaking, the audience was really small.
You know, we just finished talking about how sponsorships can play and be a primary monetization method for a podcast. But there are so many other ways that a podcast can earn for you, especially if you're willing to look at really the flow of people. Looking at the podcast as the first touch point for your business, but certainly not the last. You've talked about moving them over to an email list. You've talked about affiliate offers, obviously selling your own products. Are there any things we didn't touch on from a monetization standpoint, though, that you think a podcast can also add value to someone or a business to?
Yeah, really popular one that's probably worth mentioning would be a listener-supported show in terms of a membership community or in terms of even just like a Patreon type of offering where it's like, you know, for $5, $10, $15 a month, like you get exclusive content or you get something else. We did an episode with Garrett and Sabrina from the I Know Dino podcast. It is a dinosaur news podcast. And I was like, is it really that much dinosaur news coming out? Like, to support a weekly show?
It doesn't feel like that.
We are in a golden age of paleontology. And that's how they were monetizing. I think they did have some sponsors, but primarily through Patreon. I came across a guy with a Taylor Swift podcast that he was co-hosting. I think it was called Evolution of a Snake. And they had like an estimated, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a month in recurring Patreon revenue for their like exclusive Taylor Swift takes. Wow. It was like, good on them for like, you know, piggybacking on the popularity of, you know, one of the most famous people on the planet, but like being consistent with it, like obviously producing a good show that the fans, like the super fans, like wanted more of.
Yeah.
And that was a really unique monetization method, but we've seen other hosts kind of monetize in that way where it's becoming like member supported. There was even a guy, Scooter, he hosts the Sleep With Me podcast where it's like a sleep aid. Like I'm going to tell you a progressively more and more boring story. And he goes to this podcasting event and Casper is there like, how are we not sponsoring your show? He's like, well, it better be a pre-roll because the whole goal is to get people to fall asleep.
Yeah, exactly.
lots of creative ways to do it. And even some of the more interesting ones, even if relatively speaking, nobody is tuning in, like selling to an audience of one. Like if you have an agency service or kind of a higher ticket type of offering where you have a very specific customer avatar, like using the podcast as an excuse to get them on the phone, right? We've seen people reach out on LinkedIn. Hey, you're a thought leader in your space. You're the exact type of person that we're trying to interview for this podcast. And it's an excuse to get them on the phone and start a conversation and be like, well, what is it that you do? Oh yeah, we do, you know, PR for exactly you, like your type of business. Like, oh, we got to talk, you know, tell me more about that. So lots of different ways to get it done.
That's fascinating. Now that's an interesting angle right there, because you're right. Like that's an interesting way to meet people. Wow. Okay. Man, Nick, thank you for coming on the podcast. Congratulations on your success. I've known about your show for a long time, which tells me that it's that you're definitely consistently doing something great. I know a lot of people who listen to our podcast also listen to yours. Tell people where to go, not just the podcast, but tell people where to go to follow along with what you're doing.
Yeah, of course, would love to have you tune in to the Side Hustle Show. It is my labor of love, and hopefully that comes across on the mic. If you want to go deeper on anything that we talked about today, I just put the update on my podcast Growth Playbook course. It's podplaybook.co, and you can use code NICHE35 for 35% off that one. So again, Jared, appreciate you having me, and it's been a blast.
We'll get those links and details in the show notes. So if you want to click down, you can see those. Nick, great to talk to you. As always, good to reconnect. And congratulations. Looking forward to many, many more good episodes coming out in the future. We'll talk again soon.
Cheers.